stand by.
Hi, this is Jeff.
And Gretchen.
And you're listening to This and That podcast, show number 44.
Ooh. 44.
Yeah, and before we go on the show, I did want to share with the listeners a trick, a podcasting trick, and just a trick to get your overall confidence up. This is what I do before every show.
Is this for people who don't know about podcasts?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you're giving them a hint?
I feel handsome, I'm so handsome, I feel handsome and charming today, and I pity any man that's not me today. Gretchen, you can join in. I feel witty, I feel fantastic, I feel charming and I will do the news, and I pity any podcaster that's not me today. Okay, what do you think?
Wow.
That's my little psych up.
Okay.
Do you want a verse? Go ahead.
Thanks, I don't know the lyrics.
All right, here goes Gretchen. Such a pretty face, such a pretty face, such a pretty me. I feel pretty, oh so pretty. I am Gretchen and I feel so pretty today. All right, that's enough of that. Did you enjoy that?
That was funny. Cute, Jeff.
So that's my psych up every day, and I just wanted to share that with the listeners.
Do you do that when you get out of bed in the morning?
I do. It just gives me confidence for the day, and everybody should have a psych up. So are you laughing with me or are you laughing at me?
Probably with you, because
okay.
You're laughing.
All right. I take my psych ups very seriously. So how's everybody out there in podcast land today? We've missed you. It's been about 3 weeks or so. And Gretchen has been on a trippy trip. And actually, I just came back from L.A. myself for the weekend. And that was fun. I always love L.A.
Yeah. It's a wonderful place.
I call it La La Land.
Yeah, nobody else calls it that, Jeff. Just you. It's an original.
Just me. Just me. And I read all kinds of interesting stories about L.A. because there's this movie out now called Black Dahlia.
Mm-hmm.
So I read all about that murder. I haven't seen the movie yet, but it's fascinating. Then I read about a woman that committed suicide, 1930s, I think, from the H on the Hollywood sign.
Oh, really?
And it was kind of a big deal, yeah.
Hmm.
She was very depressed. She was 25 years old, young actress that couldn't make it.
Wow.
Pretty interesting story. So if you're going to go...
Make sure you read those first.
It's not a bad way to go, really.
Oh, jumping from the Hollywood?
Jumping
sign?
From the H. Yeah.
You probably can't do that anymore.
No, I think they've got it pretty highly secured.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of noticed. In fact, they have webcams all over the Hollywood sign now.
Oh, do they?
Yeah. Yeah.
Fingers.
Yeah. And I think they
And didn't you say they were trying to move it? Wasn't that...
Well, I thought one of my friends said that they were trying to do something about it for... to avoid a terrorist attack from it, but I don't know. I looked it up and I couldn't find anything. So I think they just put extra security around it, so you can't just go up there and hang out on the H. So, and you came back from Hong Kong and China.
I did.
How was your trip?
No, well, there were just a couple typhoons, which is their equivalent of a hurricane.
Okay,
that's what they call them when it's in the Pacific.
Did they name them?
They weren't. No, they weren't. No, I think they might have been named. Yeah, they were. When it was heading towards Japan, they were naming it on the Weather Channel. So, but when you're in the actual city and it's happening, they just give it a number. And so
Right. Today
in all the lobbies, they'll say, you know, flag one is hoisted, which means it's a low level. And then it goes up to flag five. So a lot of rain. It's raining season.
Then they go up
now.
To, we can't see the flag. The flag is
right,
gone.
So the flag has been stripped away.
That's where you know it's bad.
See. Yeah, pretty bad. So I was in Hong Kong during it, and the buildings there are very secure. But I understand that, you know, in rural China, you know, lots of people die when the flood happens, and we just don't hear about it.
And you just laugh about it.
Well, I'm not exactly laughing,
well,
but I
laugh.
Mean, they just, you know, 100
they
people
just die.
And you don't really hear about it. But.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't hear about it here. Do you hear about it in the Chinese media?
Actually, yeah, you do see a little bit, and little clips of now and then in the newspaper, like
sure.
Somebody will fall to their death. There's a lot of industrial accidents, and we don't hear about them here, but
right.
You do see them there.
Very good.
Well, not that they
Well, I guess that's not very good. I guess that's not very good. I meant very good as. Okay, let's get on to the next section. That's not very good news.
Actually, it's a great city, though. It's just like New York with a lot of Chinese people, 8 million Chinese people. Very, very nice city.
Yeah.
One of the prettiest in the world. So, say nice things about Hong Kong.
All right, very good. And the Cantonese, you got to love that accent.
Mm-hmm.
Not.
Yes.
Sorry to all our Cantonese fans out there, but, you know, your accent's a little rough.
Sure.
But we love you anyway. Yeah. We really do.
Well, they probably don't think English is all that pretty.
You know, I don't think we've ever gotten anybody that came to the website from Hong Kong. We've gotten Chinese from China, but not no Hong Kong, so I feel pretty confident about, you know, putting down the Cantonese accent. But I love listening to him play Mahjong. Clickety clackety, clickety clackety. It's very, very fast. So what you got?
Well,
anything good?
Do you know what was unveiled this week?
Unveiled.
Did you happen to see him? He's red and furry.
Hmm.
Been all over TV and the press.
Really?
Lots of coverage.
Huh, I don't know.
Red and furry.
Red and furry. A red panda bear.
No. No.
I don't know.
Well, how about Tickle Me Extreme Elmo?
Really? I haven't seen that.
You haven't seen Tickle Me Extreme Elmo?
No.
TMX Elmo is what he's being referred to as. The 10th anniversary of Tickle Me Elmo. And what's amazing about this little guy is this has been unprecedented security in the world of toys and secrecy. And he was revealed and only 42 people knew about him during his entire creation.
Wow.
Which is pretty remarkable in an industry and a company as large as Mattel, which Fisher-Price is a division of Mattel.
The government, U.S. government. Could learn something from them.
Probably. But he was unveiled on Good Morning America and The View, and he was on every newscast, and he's been on...
Yeah, you know, I saw a demographic thing about morning shows.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I meant to cut that out and talk about it today, but it's highly women.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
So they would.
Gee, guess what? I didn't catch the Tickle Me Elmo Extreme.
Well, I'm just reading the Wall Street Journal summary of.
Okay.
Right? They did cover it too.
You just emasculated me.
Yeah,
fine.
I'm sorry. But
didn't catch The View last week.
Which also missed the Wall Street Journal. Yeah, well, this is the new incarnation. He's not doing the chicken dance or the hokey pokey anymore. This time he laughs uproariously in three different positions.
Really?
It actually is pretty funny. It's really amazing technology, and that's the thing that's probably going to make it be impossible to get come December 1 because the technology is really, really advanced. He's $39.99, and because of the secrecy around him, there's going to be huge demand. So between the technology and the demand, if you really want one, go get one now. There's been a tremendous amount of pre-sales on it, but it's, you know,
helpful
it's been
hint
gimmick.
From this and that podcast. Go out and get your extreme
Tickle Me Extreme.
Tickle
TMX.
Me Extreme.
Elmo.
Elmo. Whatever.
See, Tickle. There's a picture of him that your viewers can't.
He is extreme. You
he
should
is
see
extreme,
this picture.
Isn't he?
He's extreme. He's
There's
falling
actually
backwards.
One of his positions, he gets down on the floor and he pounds his paws on the floor on his stomach, and then he flips over and he stands back up.
Well, you know, for Christmas, my mom likes to get the family a little gag,
well,
you know, a little gag gift. So she
see
gave.
If she can get at you.
Well, she gave. She unveiled. I mean, she doesn't buy them for $45. She buys them at the, you know, secondhand store, right? If she can find something funny. But she did find that one of those Elmos that danced.
Mm-hmm.
And let me tell you, it's fun. Really, it was pretty funny. We laughed and laughed, and then you'd push him down and you'd say, help me up,
That's
help
right.
me up.
That's right. Well, you're going to laugh Very even cute. Harder at this one.
All right. Well, in about 3 years, Mom will pick one up at the secondhand
right.
store, so it'll be awesome. Can't wait. Gives me something to look forward to. Mom's listening to this and saying, that's my boy.
Now she knows what to get you for Christmas.
Yes, she does.
She could really surprise you.
Yeah, brand new one if she can get one. So do we think that's going to be the hot toy for the year?
Yeah, it's actually putting some life back in this kind of listless toy industry.
Yeah, I'm trying to think. Was there really a hot toy last year?
No, it's been really hard the past couple years because now kids all want electronics and video
right.
games. So.
I guess the PlayStation 2s and some of the games
mm-hmm.
have probably been
That's
big sellers.
That's what it's all been.
Yeah.
Tremendous video game sales and the age compression in the toy industry, which is why toys are really suffering.
Right. That's too bad. But like the old traditional Barbies and G.I. Joes and stuff, do they still sell?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but Barbies lost a lot of market share to Bratz. And, you know, G.I. Joe is lost to all the Power Rangers
right.
and all the... you know, all the Spider-Man dolls, and, you know, it's just, it's tough out there to be a
evergreen toy.
You're a toy. It really is. It's tough to be a classic
that
toy.
That reminds me of the land of the lost toys. And is that Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer? They were so sad because nobody came and picked them up and nobody loved them. Gretchen cries every time she sees that, I'll
bet.
That's
right. That's right.
No, actually, what Gretchen thinks is that's just poor marketing. Well, I have a story.
Okay.
This kind of intrigued me. Every summer, since 1998, we've had 292 kids in the United States that have died for essentially being left in the car, okay? And everybody knows that it happens. So I don't know if you do the division, it's probably 20 to 30 per year. We kind of live with it. I mean, it's, you know, it's bad, but it's one of the things. But we only had one this year, I believe. There's a guy named Brian Flanagan, age of 33.
You're talking here just in Dallas or Texas?
Yeah, just in Dallas. Dallas. We only had one. I think we typically have two or three or four. But we had one, and the guy dropped off his older child at a daycare but forgot about the younger one. So he went on to work, and the kid was in there all day long.
Mm-hmm.
So that probably died pretty quickly. But here's the interesting thing part about it. Is now, and this just turned, this happened maybe two or three months ago, but now they have decided to charge him with a felony count of injury to a child, and he faces 20 years in prison. And I'm thinking, I don't understand why he would go to prison. I don't really know what I kind of did some research and a little bit and looked up laws around the country, and it seems like 9 or 10 states out of the 50 have some sort of laws on the books against this. And you know, I can see some reason to have either public service announcements against, hey, don't forget you got kids, you know, in the car. Don't run into a supermarket for 4 minutes, because 4 minutes sometimes turns into 15 minutes and you never know. So I can see, you know, making the public more aware of these kinds of things. And I can even see maybe if there is a child in a car and a policeman finds it to find the owner or something. But I'm not sure I understand 20 years of prison for something this guy probably will never ever be able to live with in his life. You know, is sending a guy to prison for this going to dissuade parents from making a blooper and forgetting something? And it's kind of analogous to if you got, Gretchen, got fined $30 every time you stubbed your toe,
mm-hmm.
would you stub your toe any less?
Yeah.
Let's say you got fined $500 for stubbing your toe. No, you wouldn't, because you didn't mean to stub your toe in the first place.
Right.
So it's.
Well, have they determined that? Because they're clearly saying it's such negligence on his part that maybe they are trying to send a message.
Well, I wonder if there is more to this story, because they did. It is coming like two or three months after the fact.
Yeah, and he just sort of forgot, which, yeah, I believe the child fell asleep, and that's why he was quiet, and when he got out and went to work.
Right.
But do you really go 8 hours without thinking about your kids if you're a parent?
Right, right. But, well, I mean, he just went through his normal day. You know, apparently he was taking this kid to something that he didn't normally do, and clearly there was no malcontent on his part, right?
Well, maybe that's what they're thinking there might have been.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
That would be interesting.
Maybe they found out that maybe this was his way of, you know, trying to hurt his child.
Yeah.
And he's really succeeded.
He very much succeeded.
I don't know. It sounds like this
would
have to go to the jury to actually get all the evidence and actually hear him testify.
Right.
Well, maybe he won't even have to testify, just if he chooses to. But
right.
It's certainly very tragic.
But I'm thinking in general.
It was very sad when I heard it.
These guys, I don't know if I would agree with
a big prison.
Yeah, I
mean, he's
already
heartbroken,
right.
is what you're saying.
His life is kind of, you know.
Never be the same.
Never be the same.
Right. But do you think somebody like this should have more children?
Sure. I've forgotten my laptop at work sometimes. You know, I forgot to bring it and I had to go home and get it. It's not the same penalty as having your child die on you, but yeah, I mean, humans do this. And that's why we have 292 since 1998. It's not because people, I mean, hopefully, it's mostly not because people are malicious. It's because human beings are human beings. So, you know, are his other kids, is he a danger to society? And are his other kids in danger? I kind of don't think so. So, it's interesting.
Well, yeah, it's up to child protection, I guess, to determine that.
Right. And every case is going to be different. I'm just talking about somebody that legitimately had a brain fart.
Oh, horrible price to pay for it.
Yeah.
Well. you think are the world's tallest people? Have you heard about this?
I would say Scandinavians.
Well, they're tall, but they're not the tallest. And the tallest people are actually continuing to grow, which is really interesting. The Scandinavians have stopped growing, according to this survey.
Wow.
And the Dutch have now taken the place for the last, since 1950s, as the tallest people. And this generation has reached incredible new heights. So, experts say they're still getting bigger, and it's a tale of the nation's wealth and health. The average Dutchman is over 6 feet tall, while the average Dutch woman is 5'7", which is really, really pretty amazing.
Yeah, that is.
About it. And they surpassed America in 1950, who had been the tallest for the last 200 years. Now the United States is even behind Denmark. But yes, you're right. Scandinavians are also tall. But they're saying the Dutch, because of what they eat and where they've lived.
And the marijuana.
Probably the marijuana. Just continue to grow.
Huh.
And they think within 50 years, the average Dutch man could be 6'3".
Oh, come on.
Isn't that amazing? No, I'm serious. I'm serious.
Wow.
And Scandinavians who had been 6 feet are not getting taller. They've hit their genetic glass ceiling.
So do they know why?
Well, they did say that during World War II, they lost inches. So they really do attribute a lot of it to what they eat and where they live. And they said height appears to come naturally with the territory. 2,000 years ago, the men in the Lowcountry stood 5'9", which were tall for the age. And they became guards for the Roman Empire. And
oh, because they're in the Lowcountry. They have to compensate.
They had to get tall. That's right. They had to get tall. Then the heights declined over 1,800 years as the food supply failed to keep pace. But then when Amsterdam became the world's richest city in the 17th century, they started to get taller. And it was in World War I that the Dutch regained 4 inches lost over the past two millennium. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Well, maybe they lost 4 inches because the taller ones were in the military and
that's right, they
got
were all fighting
off.
Somewhere.
Yeah,
know?
Maybe.
And then they had to
I mean, 4 inches seems kind of dramatic over a change over 4 years. I'll bet it.
No,
I'll bet it's casualties.
Over two millennium, over 200 years.
Four inches over 200 years.
They gained it all back.
Okay.
As of World War I.
Got it.
Yeah. So, just thought that was pretty interesting.
Very interesting.
That they continue to grow. So in 50 years, we'll be reporting that they're even taller.
Well, I'll bet Chinese are continuing to grow.
I bet we talked that North Koreans are not.
No, I don't think the North Koreans are growing. Well, I have a list here, and my list is the most dangerous cities in America, as far as large cities go.
Oh, I know. Dallas is on it.
Guess what number one is?
It's Dallas, isn't it?
It's Dallas.
I heard that.
God, do we
That's
suck.
That's horrible.
One crime really per 11.79 residents.
And it's violent crime, too, isn't it?
Well, this is one crime, reported per 11.79 residents. No, not at that rate. 11.79 residents is not violent. It's just any crime.
Any crime, okay.
I don't have the breakdown of violence and so forth. But what's interesting is about it, in the news in the last couple of days, it was shown that the chief of police, who's been new in the last year or so, and supposedly he's pretty good and has some programs that are trying to reduce that, but he has just been found out that he's having his fourth divorce because he's been dating about a 30-year younger reporter on the city beat, somebody that, you know, reports on him from a TV reporter, so maybe that's why he's not doing and paying enough attention to the crime.
It's taking me a while to make the connection.
And spending
you're
more time.
The police chief of Dallas is
correct.
Putting his energies elsewhere.
Correct.
I see.
Correct.
Okay.
Literally putting them someplace.
Okay. So, and not paying attention to the crime here.
Right.
All right.
So of the big cities, you know what's the safest city?
New York.
That's it. The Big Apple, as I call it. I don't know if anybody else. I just named that myself. and it's one crime reported per 37.38 residences.
Yeah, actually, New York makes a big deal about how crime is down and how cleaned up Times Square is.
Right.
It's really a great place for tourists.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm.
The second most crime-ridden city, it's kind of surprised me, is San Jose, California.
Oh, wow, that is surprising.
And then L.A. is actually number three.
Wow.
Then San Diego, Chicago, Philadelphia, Houston, San Antonio, Phoenix, and then Dallas.
Not Detroit?
Detroit's not in the top 10.
Wow.
I know.
Wow.
And Phoenix is horrible as Dallas, which is kind of interesting. Just very, very close. You think of Phoenix as, I think of it as
retirees, right?
Retirees and golf courses, mm-hmm. and, you know, pretty clean environment.
Right. Well, that's really unusual.
Yeah.
I'm quite surprised by that.
Well.
Now, I wonder if that correlates with the cities with the highest and lowest unemployment, because I happen to have that.
Well, why don't you share that?
So.
And then we can do some mathematical correlation and see what our R squared is.
Okay, Jeff, you can do that. And I'll move on to something way more interesting.
Okay. Well, do you have your list?
Yeah. Right. So the nation's unemployment rate is 4.7%.
Okay.
But if you want to go where it's really almost guaranteed that you'll get a job, guess where the number one place to go is.
Guaranteed to get a job? I would say, I'd say Dallas or Phoenix.
Not with the lowest unemployment
rate.
No. At 2.1%, Fargo, North Dakota.
Oh, no wonder. Yeah. Yeah, they draw a lot of people from around the world,
I'm
sure.
It's a job seeker's market there.
Yep.
Followed by Casper, Wyoming, 2.4%.
Wow.
It's really amazing that the top 20 cities are almost all in...
Small towns.
Small towns, mm-hmm. in the, what do we call this, the central part of the United States?
Northern central
part of the United States. It's Sioux Falls, South Dakota. It's Iowa. It's Bismarck, North Dakota.
Wow.
Idaho Falls, Idaho. Iowa City, Iowa. All these places that, you know, we're just all chomping to get to.
Yeah.
You know.
And those are smaller places. So it's not like my study is only looking at, you know, big metropolitan areas.
Oh, this is looking at big metropolitan areas too, but they're gonna come up on the other side.
Oh, I know, but my study limited.
Oh, it limited it. Right.
So I wonder though, some of those small towns though, they can be very much influenced by, say, one or two big companies.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So I wonder if that's one of the reasons.
Right. That's true.
Yeah.
But then the highest unemployment rates, U.S. cities. Mm-hmm. Well, the worst, Yuma, Arizona. 21.4%. Remember, the national average is 4.7.
And Yuma is what?
Yuma, Arizona, 21.4.
Wow, one out of every five.
Five people are unemployed.
You know, Yuma is a very hot place.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very hot.
A lot of poverty there, too.
Huh. So it's a border town, too, I think, or at least close to the border.
Next would be El Centro, California. Next is Gulfport, Biloxi, Mississippi, because it's still recovering from Katrina.
Oh, okay.
And next, Flint, Michigan.
Yeah, Flint.
Mm-hmm. So, sort of mid-sized cities. What's in the list of Modesto, California, Sumter, South Carolina, Visalia, California, Pine Bluff, Arkansas. Hmm. All these made the list of Battle Creek, Michigan.
Tough places to be.
Tough places to find a job, yeah.
Hmm.
Yep.
Well, there goes my plans.
Okay, so don't move to those. Okay?
I was going to go out to Yuma.
Or El Centro.
Or El Centro. But now I know better.
That's right.
Because I listen to This and That podcast. All right, well, we got a big high-profile law case. Did you hear about this? U.S. Weekly versus Kitson. You know what Kitson is.
Yeah, Us Weekly.
Us Weekly. Did I say
magazine.
U.S.? I'm sorry, Us Weekly.
You're talking about a magazine, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
I was thinking U.S. World Report or something.
U.S. News and World Report is suing Kitson?
I know. It's strange. Strange bedfellows. Or lack of bedfellows. No, Us Weekly. So for those of you who don't know who Kitson is, they're an L.A. boutique. A lot of trendy t-shirts is really what their sort of gig is. But they're suing U.S. Weekly because they're...
Wait. They're more than that, though.
Oh,
preface that. That they are where, you know, Paris Hilton and her whole crowd, that is the boutique on Robertson where the in-crowd shops.
They hang there.
They're often photographed there or they often shop there.
Right. And that's the point of the lawsuit is that what happened is that apparently Us Weekly just... They constantly photograph celebrities going in and out of Kitson, showing Kitson
as a destination,
so forth. Uh-huh. And they had some spat, and so now Us Weekly doesn't give Kitson any kind of play at all. They still will show the celebrities, but they'll block out
the name of the store,
their bags, all that kind of stuff. And so Kitson is suing them, saying essentially that let me find this figure. This is what's so funny. In the lawsuit, they're saying that the lack of publicity from us is costing the store $10,000 per week. The lack of publicity. So essentially, they're suing this tabloid because the tabloid is not giving them any kind of free publicity. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with that.
That is really amazing.
That's really amazing.
Because they didn't have to be there in the first place.
I could see, right,
you
know, exactly.
If we weren't obsessed with celebrities and where Paris Hilton buys, you know, whatever thing she's wearing,
right,
nobody would care.
Right.
And nobody would, they wouldn't have got that publicity anyhow.
Right.
But then they got it, and then they got used to it. And now that they don't have it, they see what the cost of not having their name
right.
in Us Weekly is.
Right.
At least that's how, I wonder how they estimated that.
No,
it's
no,
really pretty interesting.
It's probably pretty interesting, and I wonder if the, it's probably inflated because it is a lawsuit, but it probably does mean it's in the four figures.
Well, it's probably the price of three T-shirts, so yeah. probably not
yeah.
that much.
Actually, I did go to their website, and they had the T-shirt that was in Little Miss Sunshine,
uh-huh.
where the brother is wearing it. I can't remember the caption now. Darn it, I should have brought it. But it was $40, and it was just a T-shirt. But nevertheless, they're the only ones that make that T-shirt. It might be kind of cool to have. $40, you know. This is from Kitson, Paris Hilton shops here. She probably...
Okay, that's probably the least expensive item in the store.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, well,
oh,
trust
yeah.
me.
That's, why do you think I singled that one out?
For $40 in that store.
Why do you think I singled that one out?
Usually the T-shirts are like $150. Actually.
Right, they are.
Yeah, yeah. So
They're very cool. But
that's their low-end
line. So I can see suing them if they're photographing them in the store and maybe intentionally getting... You know, blocking out stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like I can almost see that because
then they could be harassing other
right,
patrons.
Right, and, that's right, mm-hmm. that's right.
But outside of the store,
I know.
Isn't the sidewalk city property?
Yeah, exactly.
So are they doing anything wrong?
Right.
You know?
Right.
Hmm.
So we'll see what happens.
That is interesting.
Yeah.
So I saw something interesting actually, because the papers in Hong Kong are really unusual, but this may have actually been reported here too. But because China is now becoming a wealthier nation, they're actually starting, Chinese mainlanders are actually starting to travel. And the whole tourism industry is seeing just giant dollar signs because we're talking about 1.3 billion people who are starting to get enough money and enough permission from their communist government that they're allowed to leave and go on trips. And primarily they go as big groups. But you're seeing in record numbers now of tourists flocking to London, Egypt, and Hong Kong. And even Hong Kong is a special administrative region. But they still need a visa to go to Hong Kong if you're
a mainland. Did you say London and Egypt?
London and Egypt.
Okay, Egypt is the interesting one there.
Right. So they are now going to be the fourth largest group of globetrotters in the world.
Do they play basketball?
Huh. Yes, these
How
Chinese
about that?
Do.
And like spin the ball on their fingers? That is so cool.
Right. That's right. Da, da, They're going to make 34 da, da, million da, trips da, this year.
Da, da. Wow.
And most of them are going to go, well, that's behind...
To Egypt.
That's behind the Germans, the Japanese, and the Americans. Those are the only people who travel more now.
Really?
Chinese. Or Germans,
really?
Japanese, and Americans.
Well, is that sheer volume? Because, sure, I mean, China has lots of people.
Has lots of people. And now they're getting this newfound wealth because the middle class is developing. But 90% of their trips go to our Asian destinations like Bangkok or Hong Kong.
Right.
But outside of Asia, most of them are going to Europe. Or North America, but not necessarily the United States because we have a lot of restrictions here where because of 9/11 and it's hard to get visas. We haven't welcomed them yet, but that's coming. We are going to be welcoming them. And next they go to the Middle East. Yeah, so most of them want low-cost hotels. Most of them want to just eat Chinese food, and most of them want to bag tourist destinations, which means they want to see as many as possible in the shortest amount of time, not actually get to understand the culture or spend any time, but actually just say that they went and they saw.
And you know, it's easy to put that down, but you know, I can sort of see that as being step one in the travel maturity of a country.
That's right.
You know what I mean?
It's
almost like status travel. Go back to your
That's
friends.
Right.
I saw the
That's
X, right. Y, Z, A, B, C, D, E. It's almost like a laundry list. But as travel becomes more of a part of a culture, then it becomes a little more sophisticated. So I can actually see that.
Right. They're being compared to the ugly Americans.
Yeah.
Bumbling.
Yeah, we haven't matured this
right.
stage.
We still wear way too much spandex overseas. And but what else is, when you think about it, the average Chinese per capita income is $900 a year. Okay, so that's why when they go on these tours, it does have to be economical. But what's becoming really noticeable to people who see these large groups of Chinese travel is that they're really not very great tourists yet because they don't know.
Right.
They're really, really loud.
Really?
They spit, they cut in line, they smoke in areas they're not supposed to smoke, they don't observe dress codes, and they frequently squat on a sidewalk when they want to rest. So the Chinese government is going to issue some etiquette guides to teach them manners when they travel abroad, because they don't want them to be thought of as ugly Chinese.
Right, right. Well, that's proactive.
Right.
And you know, some of those things that they do, it's not because
cultural.
They're rude people.
Right.
It's because that's what they do
cultural.
In their country.
Right,
right,
right. They're very, very loud talkers, you know. And the
I do remember we've had a number in my last job, a number of business people coming from mainland.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't take them out anywhere for dinner except for Chinese places.
Why? They just didn't want to try even a steakhouse?
They didn't want to try anything.
Yeah.
They didn't want to try. They didn't, you know, Tex-Mex, the Dallas specialty.
Yeah.
They didn't want to try it. They just wanted Chinese food, which
I
found really surprising.
Wasn't anything like what they're used to.
They're,
at all.
You know, no, of course not. I mean, it's Americanized. It's all Americanized. But you know, there are some places like we used to take them a lot to this place in Irving. I can't remember the name of it. In a back room, and apparently the owners would make special food for them.
For them. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I guess you probably can't find it, because we do have a large number of Chinese here. It's just that for the general American population, that stuff doesn't fly.
Mm-hmm.
So I can see that. They really were not, it used to make me laugh, because they really didn't like other food, you know. Again, it's that maturity level, I suppose, of travel. But well, that's good. It's good for the travel business, you know?
Yeah.
It's good for hospitality business all over the world.
Until Americans figure out how to do it, because we can actually make up some of our trade deficit by hosting large parties of Chinese.
And I got to think America is still, I mean, it's always been one of the great travel destinations.
Uh-huh.
For good reason. There's so much here to see. So many cool stuff, from great cities like New York City to great canyons. Grand Canyon.
What's that other city that you made up? La La Land?
La La Land, as I call it.
I wonder if they know what that one is.
I wonder. Yeah, it's a well-kept secret.
but you know, we are going to see a lot of them with the Olympics going to Beijing in 2008.
Yeah.
And they're actually, their cab drivers are getting a lot of lessons in English. The hotels are learning how to be a little more friendly to a Western traveler.
Right.
So they're going to put on a really good face for the Olympics. And I think everybody's going to look at Chinese people a little differently.
I think so, too. I think so, too.
Are you going to sing again?
No. I was just queuing something up. We're going to play a game. Okay. Are you ready to play?
Okay.
Okay. I heard something on NPR on the way home today. They were talking about a game called Magic. What do they call it? Magic Radio. The Magic Radio. Yeah. Ever heard of the Magic Cue Ball, Magic 8-Ball?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. You ask it a question, uh-huh, and then you shake it up, and you get the answer. Okay. Well, this is, you ask the Magic iPod, we're going to play Magic iPod, a question,
uh-huh,
and I will put a random song on, and then we have to interpret, that's the answer to the question, essentially, but it's not always clear, and we have to interpret what that means, you know,
uh-huh,
into our answers.
Uh-huh.
So it's best not I'm guessing, but it's best not to ask yes or no questions. So we're going to play a little bit. And the fun is in the interpretation, so we'll see how it goes. This may be really a stupid bit, but...
Okay, then you can always cut it out, right?
Right.
Okay.
That's right.
That's fine. Okay, so I wish I would have thought of some questions. Okay,
I
have to come up with some questions.
Come up with a question.
Okay.
Meanwhile, I'll put this in the background.
Oh, that was loud.
I feel pretty.
No, no, no.
Oh, so handsome.
No, not pretty.
This little background nude music.
I'm trying to think what I want to know.
This is Dave Brubeck, by the way, and
he's so good.
Yeah.
He's old, though.
Well, he might be dead.
No, I think he's still alive.
Really?
He's old.
And Paul Desmond on the sax.
All right.
Give it up for Paul Desmond, everybody.
What do I want him to know?
Because he feels pretty. All right, come on.
Oh, I have a question or two about you, but we'll skip that.
Can't ask those.
We'll skip that.
Yes, I am charming. I am witty.
Are you pretty? I don't know. Are you feeling pretty? Depends how you answer that.
I feel handsome.
Okay.
I feel manly.
All right, there you go.
I feel like watching football all day.
Okay, how will my friend Susan's trial end next week?
Okay.
Okay. For people listening, I have a girlfriend who had a horrible accident.
So, okay,
the,
so that's
the,
it.
What's the chorus say?
I look just like Buddy Holly. Oh, and you're Mary Tyler Moore. But really going for the first few lines of it. So what are these homies doing dissing my girl? What do they got going on? So how can we interpret that as to the answer to how will the trial go?
I think that's what the New York jury is going to say.
What
are these homies, meaning this company, during missing this girl?
Right. We won't go into the full lawsuit, but okay. I don't know if you can.
It was just a total accident at a restaurant, and don't see any way you could think this is this woman's fault that she fell in a hole in the restaurant,
right.
And she's just asking to have her expenses covered, and they're not even offering that, and it's just very unfortunate.
So I think that's a great interpretation.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's going to go well.
Well, we hope so. What are they doing, dissing my girl?
Yeah, exactly. All right, my question is: I'm going through a 3-day training class next week. Is it going to be boring or is it going to be fun? Will I learn something?
You can't ask a yes or no question. Is it going to be boring?
Oh, no. Okay.
Yes.
So tell me what I can expect from this class.
This is for work, right? You're being trained for work?
Right. Oh, boy. My iPod screwed up. The buttons don't work anymore. I have to replace it. Dang it. I press the button and it presses the one button for the other one.
Are you serious?
Darling, please believe me.
Not sure this is the answer you want to the training class.
I'll never do you
no harm. Believe me when I tell you.
I'll never do you no harm.
Whoops.
Hey, we've had a problem here. Can you say again, please? Houston, we've had a problem.
Okay, sorry about that. You'll never believe what happened. My iPod just stopped working. It works, but when you press a button, it does the wrong thing, so I can't control it. So we're going to take up with this segment. In a later show, when I get either a new pod or get a new iPod or get this one fixed. So, bad apple. Bad apple.
But it is 2.5 years old.
It is.
And you've enjoyed it tremendously,
actually,
right?
Do you know what? It's actually only a year and a half old. I think it's a year and a half now. But iPod has gone probably 2 or 3 generations since I had it.
And it's not warranted?
I don't know. I don't know if I care. No, I think it was warranted for a year. I mean... I'm sure I could send it back to Apple and pay for them to fix it, but I'm kind of ready for one of the sleeker, newer, fun ones. Maybe I could get them. Could you fix this into one of those smaller, sleeker, cooler, fun ones? I don't know if that'll work.
Well, I'll tell you something really great about your iPod. Well, it's not great. It's really interesting about your iPod when you get it working.
Okay.
So.
Oh, okay, cool.
Yeah, it's a little behind-the-scenes look at... exactly how it got here and exactly what went into it.
All right, very good. We'll look forward to that.
One of the stories that I actually heard in China was all about little old Dallas.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, pretty amazing that, the story about the Dallas school board member, Ron Price, who wants children or kids to pull up their pants and stop showing their underwear,
right,
which is referred to as sagging, that he's saying that it's public indecency and he wants to actually fine kids for doing that. And he's asking the school boards to actually take up his cause and, pass a fine for children who do that. They actually reported on that at CNN Asia.
I can't believe it.
Hard to believe.
And we were kind of talking about those kind of themes going on in the school with the, what are the things you put in your mouth?
The grills. The grills, yeah. Mm-hmm.
How about that?
Yeah, so he was just, I haven't caught up to see if they've made any decisions yet, but it's going to be really hard to mandate dress for what kids wear to school. It's very difficult. So,
what makes it so difficult?
Because there's a lot of laws on the book that say it's a violation of First Amendment rights.
Oh, okay.
So
that's a real uphill battle, huh?
Mm-hmm, it is going to be an uphill battle. I mean, I'm not even sure if the school board isn't even up for it.
Right, but, right. Yeah, I'm sure they don't really have the legal fees for a big fight, you know?
Right, because all it takes is somebody to sue and challenge it in court. And then, it'll probably get elevated. So.
Right.
So I just thought that was amazing to see Dallas.
Yeah.
You know, halfway around the world, and there's little old Dallas.
Aw, did you miss it?
Yeah, I did, actually. It's like, wow, look at that. I know. And we're showing Dallas's finest underwear to the world.
Absolutely. Our underwear is from Kitson.
That's right.
At $100 a piece. Well, what else you got?
Well, something sort of sad that I didn't even know about, and it doesn't really affect us because we're such a rich country, but I don't know if you realize that there is a world food supply, and we're actually now at our greatest shortage of world food that we have been in the last 30 years. And for every year in the past 7 years, the world's harvest of food has failed to produce enough food to feed everybody on Earth, and we've actually been eating our way through all the stockpiles that we've saved up. So now we're running out of food to feed the world.
Including the spinach. We've been eating a lot of the spinach stockpiles that the cows crapped on and gave us E. coli.
That's right. But food prices are starting to go up as a result of this, and you know, it doesn't make the news here because we're a relatively wealthy country, even though we're in 12.
So where are these stockpiles?
Well, the stockpiles primarily go to feed the poorer countries. I don't know if they're literally there, located there, mm-hmm. but it doesn't say in this
stockpile
article.
Of food.
Right. Right. But the world's food stocks have shrunk from enough to feed the world for 116 days in 1999 to 57 days at the end of this year, and they're dropping tremendously. And I guess the last great food crisis we had was in the mid-70s, and actually Henry Kissinger called a world food conference, and he pledged that never again would humanity run out of food. And here it is a generation later, and still 800 million people worldwide are hungry every day, and 16,000 children die every day from hunger. So we haven't solved the problem, but what is amazing is that in one single generation, we've increased grain production by twice as much as we have in the previous 11,000 years. So one generation, we've doubled grain production, but we still can't feed everybody.
Well, okay, but if you talk about the fact that we've gone from 100 and some days to 60 some days, okay, so that still tells me we have enough food. The fact that people are starving today is that we have and always have had a distribution problem.
Yes.
And it's just not getting to the people that need it.
Right. But it's dropping dramatically, and it's going to be at a point where it's a deficit situation, and that's what this article is talking about.
And then there'll be war.
Well, yeah, over food.
Then we don't need religion anymore for wars. Then it's a little more serious. I got to eat.
So besides increasing yields, the other thing we can do to boost production is plow more land, but that's not happening because of population growth and too much urban expansion.
But how can we have so much grain increase in production over the last 20 years? We haven't had that much population
increase, have we? Yes, we have. The population has increased disproportionately. And the other part of it is that now most of the world's grain is going to feed cows, and indirectly it's feeding cars. And I thought this was really particularly interesting. Since 1974, more people are eating meat, and it takes 14 kilograms of grain to produce 2 kilograms of beef, because it takes a lot of grain to feed a cow or to feed a pig. It's 8 grains.
Right.
Eight kilograms of grain to get 2 kilograms of pork. So a third of the world's harvest goes to fattening animals. So
that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Now here's the part that's really a killer, is that now, because of ethanol gasoline,
right,
the United States surplus of grain, which used to go to the
stockpiles.
Because
we've always had huge corn surplus, right?
Yeah, it used to go to, but now it's going to your SUV gas tank.
Excellent.
And this is the part that's really amazing. One tank of ethanol for a four-wheel drive SUV is enough grain to feed one person for an entire year.
Wow.
And that was just mind-boggling, to think that you fill up your SUV, you drive around Dallas for a little bit, and that would be enough to keep one person alive for an entire year.
That's a trade-off. I'd take the SUV.
So that's
because
where it's all going. We may be producing more, but there's more people, and it's going to other places like cars and cows.
I deserve the SUV. Screw that person in Nepal who can't eat. I'm going to drive my SUV wherever the hell I want to.
Or this poor little child in Darfur.
Oh, look at him. Oh. Where do you want to go in the SUV tonight? Huh?
Stop.
All right. Well, I got a solution for that.
You do?
You ready? The solution is bugs.
Bugs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay. I got a little history on eating bugs.
Oh. God.
I saw this article and I just found it very interesting. And this may be the answer you're looking for, Gretchen. So throughout history, people have always relished insects as food.
Uh-huh.
10,000 years ago, hunters and gatherers ate bugs to survive. And this is interesting. They probably learned what was edible from observing what animals ate.
Or watching their neighbor drop dead.
what you eat. We don't eat that no more.
That's right.
So the ancient Romans and Greeks dined on insects, and the aristocrats loved to eat beetle larvae reared on flour and wine.
Oh, yummy.
Aristotle said the larvae of the cicada, on attaining full size in the ground, becomes a nymph. Then it tastes best before the husk is broken. At first, the males are better to eat, but after copulation, the females, because they're full of eggs at that time.
Oh, of course.
It comes down to a lot of eggs and larvae are really typically tasty. The Old Testament encouraged Christians and Jews to consume locusts, beetles, and grasshoppers. And in the mid-19th century, they did a big study on these Indians in Nevada called the Payuiti Indians, and they didn't eat any meat, but they ate mostly wingless Mormon crickets.
Wow.
And let's see, they would dig a series of large trenches, covered them with straw, then drove hordes of crickets into the excavated trap. The Indians then set the straw on fire, burning the crickets alive.
Oh,
so
they were barbecued?
Yeah.
Tasty.
Well, the women then would gather the bushels of the charred bugs and brought them back to camp to make flour, and then they make bread out of that flour.
So it would have some protein then.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that's the thing. They're actually a highly efficient form of protein. Now, this is interesting. Many types of insects appear on the menu even today. Bugs remain a traditional food in cultures all across Africa, Asia, and Latin America. In Ghana, winged termites are collected and fried, roasted, and made into bread. In South America, insects are eaten with cornmeal porridge. In China, beekeepers are considered viral because they regularly eat larvae from their beehives. So they're the macho men there.
And I've heard they've been dipped in chocolate, right?
I think a lot of desserts like that.
Like cricket and chocolate or something.
Yeah. In Japan, they like aquatic fly larvae sautéed in sugar and soy sauce.
Mm.
And in Bali, they like de-winged dragonflies boiled in coconut milk with ginger and garlic. Now, what's interesting about this, in New Guinea and Aboriginal Australia, they like grubs. In Latin America, they like cicadas and fire-roasted tarantulas. And ants are prevalent in all kinds of traditional dishes all across Latin America. One of the most culinary insects, the agave worm, is eaten in tortillas and placed in bottles of liquor in Mexico. This is the part that was kind of interesting to me. Despite its long tradition and current favor among at least half the world's people, eating insects is still rare in two places, United States and Europe.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
That's why Fear Factor is so popular.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. But it said, and the reason is after Europe became agrarian, insects were seen as destroyers of crops rather than a source of food.
Mm.
We became invested in livestock, and bugs all of a sudden became the enemy. But Westerners, we readily consume shrimp and lobster, which, like insects, scientifically are arthropods.
Mm.
So it's really not that completely different. The nutritional aspects of bugs are typically, hamburger is like 18% protein and 18% fat, but cooked grasshoppers contain up to 60% protein with just 6% fat. And like fish, insect fatty acid is actually unsaturated and even healthier. So it's actually pretty healthy. Insect farming is more efficient than cattle production. 100 pounds is just what you get into.
Absolutely.
Of feed produce 10 pounds of beef, while the same amount of feed produces 45 pounds of crickets. So there you go.
So I wonder why it's not more popular here, because you'd think some restaurant would make it a delicacy.
It's a cultural thing that we've had probably for 200 or 300 years.
But we always want to try something different, and we always want to try something that nobody else has done.
Right.
So.
Well, what's interesting, and that I was just going to get a news story before we did this show.
Mm-hmm.
Just today, I saw the Great America.
That's right.
An amusement park in Chicago.
Eating the beetle.
Eating this special kind of, it's a cockroach. It's a special kind of cockroach.
It's a hissing cockroach.
Yes,
right?
Hissing. And actually, it's not as ugly and nasty looking. I did a Google graphic of it. It's not as your normal, everyday cockroach. But if you go to this Halloween Fright Night, you can get into the amusement park, and not only can you get in free, but you get in cut in every single line if you just eat one during that night. So
everybody who's not from Europe or the United States, who's used to growing up with these insects,
oh, they're gonna love it.
Got right in front of the line and said, what are you people freaking out about?
Yeah.
It's like a French fry.
Exactly. And the park has made every assurance. There's no problem with eating these. These are absolutely fine.
Uh-huh.
You know? So it's interesting.
Just a little cruel and inhumane, but oh well.
Well, I don't think they're eating them live.
Oh, I think they are.
Oh, really?
Oh, I thought it was live.
Oh.
I thought you had to eat it live.
Well, the animal world, everybody eats everything live. I mean, how is that cruel and inhumane?
No, we just heard how they killed the crickets.
Oh, that's true. That's true. They made a flour out of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who knows what a tortilla tastes like made out of ground crickets, burned, charred ground crickets. It could
who
be
knows?
Quite tasty.
We may have had it in our life and just never known.
Right.
Especially if you've traveled around.
I'm going to go out and collect some tonight and make some. And
that's your dinner.
We'll try it. We'll try it for a high-protein meal.
Well, I've seen the worm in tequila before, and if you're
right.
Really, if you really have been sharing the tequila, then the worm isn't so bad. It
I
just kind of goes down.
I know. So anyways, I do think we have some answers to our food production problems.
That is probably it, so maybe we just need to be growing more insects.
Yeah. And you can put
stop putting the corn in the SUV tank. But then again, I know it helps with global warming, so what do you do? But
right.
Then again, you're still feeding it to the cows, which produce a lot of problems with global warming, so.
All right. All right. It's very interesting.
Yes, it is. A lot of Americans don't know this, but, well, you might if you're a Disneyophile, that this time last year, Disney opened their Hong Kong Disneyland theme park.
Okay.
So it's been open a year. Here are some pretty pictures from it.
Oh, very fancy.
So when it opened, Disney spent $15 million for the first 3 days, which was really pretty amazing. They had a huge party, right?
How come the people all look Chinese in this picture? Even Mickey.
Mickey does not look Chinese. Oh, he doesn't.
No, he doesn't.
He does not. So it's been open a year now, and they had projected goals of 5.6 million visitors, and they've only hit a little bit over 5 million. So it's missed its first year attendance figure, which I guess is sort of a big deal, but they're still pretty happy. They're working out the kinks. It's by far more successful than Euro Disney, which has been pretty much a disaster from the get-go, but It really hit its stride in February. It made headlines when the park sold out because it was Chinese New Year, lunar holiday, and it was forced to close its gates. And then there were so many tour groups that had come from the mainland and they couldn't get in that people were actually pushing their kids and lifting them up over the fence and dropping them down. It was really pretty.
Wow.
A very security issue in February. But what is pretty interesting about it is that it's created 18,000 new jobs. The government of Hong Kong, the Hong Kong taxpayers provided $4 billion in financing to Disney to put the park there. Most of it went to reclaim the land because it was built on an island, so they had to pull the land back out of the ocean, which they do frequently, and they're very good at it. They also they gave them equity money. They put up a lot, and now the taxpayers keep asking Disney, so what are we getting, and how are our returns on our $4 billion investment?
How are those returns coming?
And Disney's really pretty tight-lipped about what they're getting back in return.
Imagine that.
Yeah, isn't that surprising?
They didn't have to make any kind of guarantees with the city?
Oh, yeah, they did. They made guarantees with the Chinese government, actually.
Wow.
And the Chinese government owns the majority because an American company can't own the majority there. The Chinese government owns... The park is owned by a joint venture. The government holds 57%. Walt Disney owns 43%.
Huh.
And yes, they are promised, after the first phase is done, they're promised $19 billion in economic benefits. So over the course of 40 years, they're anticipating a huge amount of return
right.
for the taxpayer. But I mean, it's really, you got to really sit it out, and you got to be waiting. And
now you're a little bit of a Disneyophile, given the fact that you worked there and kind of got into the culture a bit. How does Tokyo Disneyland do? I would imagine it does pretty well.
It does very well. I was there in the dead of winter, and so bundling up in a coat and scarf and hat, and still the park was packed.
Wow.
Can you imagine going on roller coaster rides in the dead of winter?
I know.
I mean, it just doesn't make any sense to us, but
right.
because, you know, you go when you can, and it's always a treat. But here, they're predicting most of their visitors are going to be from the mainland, and there's so many people that they can pull from. I mean, they're just... But they actually did a stupid thing. Disney pissed off the local travel agents at the get-go, and they weren't paying them enough to sign, and they brought in outside tour groups to set up the tours internally, and that didn't go over really well.
Ouch.
So it's left a bitter taste in the local.
I'm surprised a big company would make those kind of mistakes.
It
sound like fundamental mistakes.
Yeah, that was just a giant blunder. They were just too arrogant, and they didn't understand how it worked, or they didn't want to admit how it worked. So,
gosh, anybody that knows anything about, especially coming into places like China and Hong Kong,
know
to use internal resources.
Local.
Right, he's local. Exactly.
Totally.
Interesting.
So they're anticipating that it will succeed. It's very little. I have been there. There's only like 17 rides.
Yeah.
And
wow.
It's really small. If you've been to the original Disneyland in Anaheim, it's very, even smaller than that. And so you would just go, wow, what's all the, you know, commotion about? But
Well, they're littler people.
That's true. They are shorter. But the enthusiasm is just amazing. Like the last segment, it's 22 minutes from downtown Hong Kong to get there. And it's in the middle of the boondocks. It's where the old airport used to be. And the last ride, you're actually on a Disney-owned tram.
Wow.
And the little handholds are all Disney ears. And there's little Disney statues in the corner. And everybody takes pictures. I mean, there's so many pictures being taken in the car, the subway car, to get to the actual park. It's really pretty amusing.
Well, I wonder if they did like they did in Florida, put all kinds of Mickey ear symbols all over the park for people to find,
There are.
You know,
there
do
are.
All that kind of.
And surprisingly, the characters that are popular there, like Mickey Mouse, which in the United States, Mickey has an identity problem because a new generation of kids doesn't really even know Mickey. It's all about Winnie the Pooh and the Disney princesses. But there, it's all about Mickey and his friends Pluto and Donald.
The problem with
the
Mickey.
The chipmunks. That's what's so amazing. The chipmunks are very popular.
Oh, yeah.
Remember the chipmunks?
Yeah, barely. We were talking about this before. Not on the podcast, but Mickey, I mean, what has he done lately?
I know.
In fact, even when he was at his heyday, what did he really do? He really didn't do much.
Well, he was Walt's creation. He was the character that put Walt Disney on the map.
Right.
He created this Steamboat Willie was his first actual short.
Yeah.
I think it was 1927. And then Snow White was what actually made the studio.
So Mickey is sort of
Mickey's an American icon. But and he does have a crisis because, I mean, a new generation of kids just doesn't know him unless they go back to old cartoons or the Mickey Mouse
Club. Well, even then, I remember as a kid, like, looking for Mickey Mouse cartoons, and I don't think there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he's not really that funny. He doesn't do much that's interesting.
Not like Tom and Jerry smoking cigars.
See, that's cool.
Remember that?
Tom and Jerry were always cool.
Really bad role models. Or the Pink Panther. No, not the Pink Panther. The Roadrunner.
The Roadrunner.
Always getting killed.
I like that Ace Company, though.
That's right.
He always
Acme.
Got cool stuff from Acme.
Acme.
Acme, yeah, that's right.
Wile E. Coyote and the Roadrunner.
Good stuff.
That would be Warner Brothers.
Well, I've got a couple crazy weird stuff. Real fast weird stuff to talk about. All right. In Texarkana, you ever heard of that city?
Yes, I have.
Yeah, it's a great place. I wonder how the economics are there. Anyways, pest control in a downtown bank branch has outraged many fairgoers. So they were having this fair downtown, and just before, this bank had decided they had too many pigeons on their rooftop.
Uh-huh.
So they had some pest control up there. They said they basically had... what did they use here? They used corn that was infected to make the birds go away. And they said it meant to sicken the pigeons and divert them from the rooftop. But what actually happened is during this fair, they had pigeons left and right nose diving into the pavement and, you know, dying on the side streets and the streets. And, I mean, it was just a horrible thing.
Oh.
And to the anti pest company, you know, kind of apologized and everything. And they said, nobody intended to harm these things. They just wanted to get rid of them. But if you're an anti-pest company and that's sort of the results of your, pest control, mm-hmm. I think they probably lost a lot of credibility.
Oh, my.
But so if you were at that fair, you had pigeons diving on you and dying.
Oh.
So that's a lovely story.
Yeah, that is a lovely story.
And another lovely story out of China, I'm sure you probably saw this. There was this drunken Chinese migrant.
Oh, of course, I would have seen this. I can't miss one of these.
That jumped into the panda enclosure at the Beijing Zoo. And he was bitten by the bear, and he retaliated by biting him back. Did you see that?
I've heard about it.
So anyway.
I know I heard that they said alcohol was involved.
Yes. He said he drank 4 jugs of beer. And I don't know in China what a jug is. Maybe you have some insight into that. I think
it's a big beer.
So he said he felt a sudden urge to touch the panda with his hand. And I bit the fellow in the back. Its skin was quite thick, he said. And so he said, you know, they asked him why he did this. And he goes, I've seen pandas on television and seem to get along with people. No one ever said they would bite people. I just wanted to touch it. I was so dizzy from the beer, I don't remember much. Of course, remember, this is all translated, so I don't know.
Right.
Dizzy from the beer is a funny thing to say. I was all dizzy from the beer, you know. So apparently he's in the hospital with stitches, and they're not going to charge him. Which is interesting. They're not considering punishing him now. Yi, I don't know who Yi is. He suffered quite a bit of shock.
I would think they are so endangered that they would be punishing him.
I would think so, too. I really would. In that case, I kind of would, because...
And I'm pretty sure there was a sign somewhere that said this is a wild animal and it could bite.
Yeah.
He just couldn't read it because of the jugs of beer.
What is kind of funny is that he bit him back.
I know. He wasn't going to take any of that panda nonsense.
That's right. A poor panda, you know?
And did you read about the mother panda who rolled over and smashed her baby?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Yeah, that was another sad panda story last week.
Wow.
That one was reported in China. I think this one was too embarrassing. They didn't want to report it.
I did see a picture recently. I think it was in BBC, they have daily pictures. It wasn't a death or anything. It was just a really cutesy picture of this big panda and the small baby panda. And the small baby panda was unbelievably small. I mean, it seemed disproportionately small, even for a baby.
Maybe that was before she rolled over on it.
But it didn't sort of indicate this is what happened before this great tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
So the mother panda felt bad?
She was heartbroken. Mm-hmm. She knew what she did. Oh, what a shame.
That's postpartum depression.
That is just horrible. It's just horrible. Hey, wow. Did you see this? Guess what age that we're going to face age discrimination as an executive on the job?
I'm facing it now.
Yeah, you're right.
No, I'm not.
Really?
I am?
Yes, technically.
Oh, no.
27% of people aged 45 to 50 have reported facing...
Hey, I'm not 45 yet.
Oh, I forgot. Excuse me. Okay, in a couple months, you can join the statistic. They've felt some form of age discrimination, and they think it's a serious problem.
Really?
Yeah.
What form does it take?
You know, they didn't say.
Hmm.
Hiring decisions.
Okay.
They're just not given the job.
Yeah.
So it's probably...
Because I'm already getting the point of the finger pointing and like, there goes the geezer.
The old guy.
There goes the old guy.
There goes the old guy. Well, it's more... Well,
man,
it's not going to get any
better. I hope
better.
I'm still working when I'm that old.
That's right. So you can... So you too can be doing the discriminating then. So it's worse when you're 51 to 55. 34% of people in that age group have reported age discrimination. So these are the two. Between 45 and 55 is really when you're going to face some discrimination on the job as an executive.
Wow. Well, you know, just a little side note on this. I told you I had a guy looking at my house to get the external painting today. This is the guy from Three Brothers, which sounds like a Greek company. And guess what? It is a Greek company. So this guy comes over, and he's Greek. You know, it was good. Everything was good. Got a good estimate. We were somehow talking about age and like how long he's been painting. And I said, wow, how can you be painting that long? And he goes, I'm 70 years old. And Gretchen, this guy looked great.
Really?
And I just thought, you know?
And he looked at you and said, you're how old?
You're my age, aren't you?
You're how old?
No. That's not very nice.
Well, you're facing discrimination on the job from your paper.
I'm not. You are.
That's right. I am. I've hit the mark, and it's downhill for the next 10 years.
Absolutely. Mm. No, but he looked great, and it made me think, you know, well, you can do anything you want to in this country, and as long as your brain still functions and you're adding value and you work hard, and you can do, you can make it happen. I mean, this guy was 70, and he was...
So he
looked good. He was energetic. He was going to do all it himself. No. No, he's a contractor, so he gets a crew of like three or four people.
The 68-year-olds, the youngins, come paint.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're going to take 6 months. But oh, he didn't tell you that, did he?
Oh, my back's killing me today. Oh, I should have guessed when it said the geezer patrol painting squad.
they're coming.
Oh. You will have any warm milk?
You let us know how it goes in about 6 months if it's done yet.
Yeah, they'll be painting here for 6 months. Oh, God. That's funny. And then when they go to the bathroom, they'll take an awfully long time.
Oh, but they'll be here early, 5 a.m.
Exactly. Yeah, well, they got to be done in time for the early bird special.
That's right.
Over at Mel's Drive-In. Mel's Diner.
Oh, making fun of the elderly? That's horrible.
Well, we are.
Well, yeah, I am. I don't know about you.
Yeah. It's about time for the early bird.
Let's go get some grub.
The early bird platter.
Can we get some crickets, please?
Can we get some... Yeah. Well, I think that's going to do the show today.
Yeah.
And I think it was a good show. Right? Except...
You going to sing You Feel Pretty again?
No, I'm not, because I can't get my iPod. So as you heard, I had the malfunction there. We'll try to get that going next week or two. We'll try to play that game. All right. Well, say goodbye, right. Gretchen.
Goodbye, Jeff.
No. No, you should say goodbye, audience, because you're going to be here when we're done.
Goodbye, Jeff, and audience.
Goodbye, audience.
And bye, Mr. Anonymous.
Oh, yeah, Mr. Anonymous, keep him coming. I didn't quite understand the last posts, but it's okay. I'm glad somebody's writing and reacting.
That Mr. Anonymous is reacting, Jeff. We're really not. Well, put your name on it and let us know who you are.
It's better than nothing.
It's not.
It's not?
No.
Anybody that eats bugs and likes them.
Yeah, tell us about it.
Tell us about it.
Yeah.
I forgot the phone number. I forgot to bring it, but it's on the website at www.thisandthatpodcast.com. And until next week, we'll probably do this again in a week. And we'll see you later.
Alrighty. Bye.
Bye.